College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
I couldn't ask Drake to do more than what he's doing. He's trying, to understand exactly what we're doing. He's really, trying to be as well versed as he can on what we know from the Raiders. Just looking forward to going out there and watching him play and seeing our entire group out there together.
That was Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, giving a ringing endorsement. From one to ringing, that was like a five.
He's trying.
And we're trying to welcome you back here to WEEI. Dan Ball with you, Brian Frazocco back behind the glass just after 6 o'clock here on Saturday, September the 6th, 2025. Stay tuned. In just over an hour, we'll bring you pregame coverage for the Boston Red Sox. They take on the Arizona Diamondbacks. Game 2 of a 6-game road trip. Game 2 of a 3-game series. 8:10 first pitch. Lucas Giolito and Brandon Pfaadt is your pitching matchup this evening. We'll bring you the out-of-town scoreboard, lineups that include Masataka Yoshida leading off for the first time in his professional career. That's Major League Baseball and his Japanese career. First time ever he's leading off tonight. He's your DH, so
he's trying.
He's gonna try his hardest to not ground out to second base, and he'll still fail miserably at that. So we'll deal with that later on. But the voice you were hearing was that of Josh McDaniels talking about his quarterback trying his best to learn the Patriots offense and trying his best to understand and internalize what the Las Vegas Raiders are going to present as a challenge. Now, Drake May has a distinct advantage in the fact that his coaching staff should know a lot of at least the player makeup of what they're going to be facing. They've had some roster turnover in Las Vegas, but you know, Josh McDaniels does have at least a few answers to the test for this Sunday that he's trying to impart on his young quarterback. So Brian brought that clip to the attention of the staff here that we wanted to rejoin with here on WEEI, talking about the coordinator and the quarterback relationship, which going into this season and going into the offseason was one of the biggest things to watch for Patriots fans. And that was for a myriad of reasons. I mean, you wanted to learn how Josh McDaniels, if what he imparted in the year one of the Mac Jones experiment, if that was just a fluke or if he truly was able to connect with another young, not named Tom Brady quarterback and find a way to get him up to speed. And also you wanted to know, all right, so if he's not up to speed, if the language and the speed and the detail and all the things that Josh McDaniels' offense is known for, if your second-year quarterback is not at a proficient level yet with your offense, what does that mean? How are you going to change things? How are you going to make it so that your quarterback can still operate even if he's at 50% readiness, 60%, 70% readiness, wherever he is? How do you make sure that your offense can still put up points consistently against teams that, as Brian and I were debating a few moments ago, you should be able to stay with, you should be able to beat, and the difference between a 7-win season and a 10-win season is probably going to be defined by. If your offense isn't ready, if your quarterback isn't ready to operate your offense at the level of proficiency that Josh McDaniels requires, that scares the living daylights out of me for the first month of this season, because the first four games up until that Bills game are absolutely massive for what you want to accomplish. And you already know that your defense for at least the first week is down your best player, your defensive MVP in Christian Gonzalez. So you're already going to struggle, and your safety room is a disaster right now. Let's also take that into account. So your secondary on defense is less than you thought it would be. You're still not sure what you're getting from Carlton Davis either, but everything that we know, we've heard, it's been a no news is good news situation for him. So your defense isn't firing at 100%. That would suggest to me that your offense is then going to need to make up for whatever your defense is lacking. So if my quarterback is not ready to operate my offense and operate it quickly, that scares the living daylights out of me as somebody who's watching this team and somebody who's rooting for this team, because your offensive line has already proven that Drake May is not going to have all the time in the world. You're going to run out of Mississippis pretty quickly before you're dealing with somebody trying to take down the quarterback. And so if Drake doesn't have a ton of time to get the ball out, and he's also still kind of swamped with trying to study the McDaniels offense, I'm sorry. That just doesn't make me – that doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies that this team is going to start hot out of the gate. It makes me think that this offense is going to take a little time to get it moving, and that you're going to have to be a very run-heavy offense and a very screen-heavy offense, and you're going to rely pretty heavily on Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper for some short yardage kind of gains, and it's going to be a little bit of a grind. There are going to be some possessions this first month, and really up until that Bills game, because that's its own issue. There's going to be some possessions that kind of make you feel like you're hearing nails on a chalkboard. Like, this is going to, it's going to be a bit of a slog to watch this team at the beginning. But that's also okay. I know it's not going to make, it's not going to make a lot of people out there very happy to watch that. If the offense is not scoring consistently, I have the Patriots losing 21-17 tomorrow. That's my number. 17 points. That's not great. Not great, as Alex Cora would put in his lovely, lovely accent. It's not great against a team that, again, doesn't have a lot of, doesn't really have any star power outside of Max Crosby to speak of on the defensive end. That as long as you were able to at least neutralize him a bit, you should be able to put up points against. So if you're only managing 17 against them, what happens when the Steelers come into town? What happens when the Dolphins come into town? When you kind of up the ante a little bit in terms of the defensive challenges that you're going to face? It's far from a ringing endorsement from your coordinator talking about Drake May. But Brian, you were the one that brought this to the attention of the staff. What was your first takeaway from that clip?
Well, so let's say Andy Hart this week says, "Hey, Brian, why don't you jump on with a segment with me? You know, Ted's maybe out, Fitzy, you know, got stuff going on."
Yeah.
I jump in for a segment and, you know, I feel good about it. I'm like, hey, you know, I thought me and Andy had a good little rapport. It was going well.
Okay.
Ken comes in afterwards.
I've lived this life, by the way.
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
I was going to say this sort of fits in with what you've been going through
the last few months. Yeah, the Brock Holt of WEEI
afternoons.
Yeah.
Ken walks in and he goes to Andy. He goes, "Hey, so what do you think of Brian?" And this is Andy's response.
He's trying.
It just doesn't feel like a glowing endorsement. And so I think Drake May is a good quarterback, and I think Josh McDaniels is a good offensive coordinator. But I think that they are good at two very different things. What I mean by that is I think Drake May is a really good quarterback and specializes in an offense that Josh McDaniels isn't accustomed to running.
Okay.
I think Josh McDaniels' offense isn't necessarily, you know, if he could have the offense he wants to run without sort of any wrinkles or folds or trying to placate to a particular quarterback, is a very different offense than what Drake May would be comfortable with or maybe would even thrive the most in.
Right. Okay.
And I'm worried that Josh McDaniels cares more about that than the actual development of Drake May, meaning it's sort of my way or the highway. And yes, he wants the team to win. Yes, he wants Drake May to succeed, but he sort of wants him to do it his way. Now, we saw him sort of tailor the offense to the quarterback when he had Cam Newton in 2020. Now, we saw the results of that, and I thought Andy Hart was sort of playing it up a little bit that Cam had some great year in 2020. He threw for 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
8 touchdowns. So I thought it was a tough year to watch Patriots offense that year. I'm sure many other Patriots fans felt. So I don't know. I think, you know, I would like Josh McDaniels to not completely change his offense. I'm not asking him to run the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay sort of play action bootleg sort of offense, but play to Drake May's strengths, right? Like, the number one thing about Drake May is, I think, his athleticism, his build, his arm, his physical attributes. Play to that. Play to those strengths. And I'm worried that Josh McDaniels is too tied into how Drake May's picking up his offense, right? Like, quick throws, looking at the slot receiver,
yeah,
not taking a lot of shots downfield. You know, I would like Josh McDaniels to let Drake May get outside the pocket, use his legs, run for first downs. And I'm worried Drake May's not picking it up. And Josh McDaniels, maybe he tailors it back a little bit, but still wants to stick to his offense, which I think could be a recipe for a disaster.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. And I think that the poignant thing that you bring up among many is the fact that Drake's best characteristics are the physical ones, are the God-given ones, are the ones that as you grow and mature and get stronger and work out and all those kind of things, like his arm strength, his ability to scramble, his ability to run, and the ability to take a hit and get back up, and just the God-given size and weight and just entire build of the kid. That's so far at the professional level what we've seen is his best attribute.
And I say this, like, you drafted him to be a Josh Allen prototype, right?
Yeah.
You didn't draft him to be Jared Goff. So let him try to be Josh Allen. Don't try to force him to be something like Brady, something like Mac Jones his rookie year. Like, don't try to change the player that you drafted.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's fair, but that's also a two-way street. Like, Drake does need to get better at the quick passes. He does need to get better at the simple things within the game. He does need to get better at recognizing when he should remain a passer longer, step up in the pocket and make a throw versus tucking it in and running. So
absolutely. And I know it's a fine line to walk, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to play to his strengths, but you also sort of want to beat those turnovers out of him, right?
Yeah.
You want him to protect his body a little bit more. He struggled with that last year.
Like, the way he played last year is not sustainable for a starter in the NFL.
Absolutely not. And if they want to win at a high level, I do think he has to become a better pocket passer. I think that's important to win at that level. But yeah. I also sort of look at it and say, like, get him some easy plays, get him some easy throws. And I'm worried that if he's not picking up the offense, like, okay, maybe early on, sort of dumb it down a little
bit. Yeah, meet him halfway.
Exactly.
I'm worried
Josh McDaniels is a kind of guy who might be a little too stubborn to try to do something like that.
Now, so that's, and it's a fascinating point that you bring up, because what we were told this when he was hired is that he has been working diligently. He's been studying. He's been watching tape. Him and Vrabel were working together during the offseason to try to adapt and modernize his offense and to try to make it so that an athletic dual threat quarterback in 2025 could operate his offense efficiently and operate it with good proficiency. And that quote would imply to me either what he was saying about changing his offense wasn't true, or that he did that and that Drake's just not picking it up very quickly. Maybe it's a little bit of both, but again, you're dealing with games at the beginning of the season that you have a very good chance to win, and that are probably a win versus the Raiders versus a loss, or a win a sweeping the Dolphins versus splitting, or dealing with these wins in the first month versus losses are probably going to dictate, are you a game ahead of the Broncos in the wild card? Are you a game or two behind them? Like, the teams that you're going to be dealing with, your quote-unquote peers, two of which are in your division, teams that are going to be vying for that 8 to 9 to 10 win mantle that hopefully has you sniffing a wild card spot. Your offense is going to have to pick up the slack as your defense is missing Gonzalez, as your defense is still down, not 100%. Your offense is going to have to try to make up for whatever you're missing on the defensive side. And I just, I worry hearing that tone of voice from McDaniels. He was not giving a negative indictment on his quarterback on purpose. Like, those weren't the words that were coming out of his mouth. He wasn't going, this is a bust. This is a lost cause. We're looking at Dobbs. We're looking at Tommy Cutlets. Like, he wasn't outwardly, openly shading his quarterback, but he was certainly read between the lines saying that, oh, my quarterback isn't where I need him to be yet.
He's trying
this offense isn't,
you know, to understand exactly what we're doing.
He's trying to understand.
Meaning he's not there yet.
No.
Meaning he hasn't understood what we're trying to do. He's trying to.
Right.
And hopefully he gets there, but right now he's not where we want him to be. He's not understanding what we want him to understand right now.
Right.
That's a little concerning.
Absolutely. And that does suggest, and Brian, I think you're onto something with that. That does suggest to me that McDaniels and the offensive coaching staff are expecting Drake May to play the game a certain way, are expecting him to operate the passing offense a certain way, to complete certain passes, to take more minimal risks than he did in the past. and that he's still – this is kind of trying to watch what happened in the preseason and in training camp and applying that to this quote.
Or is it even just trying to understand the language of the offense? We've heard that the Josh McDaniels language of the offense can be difficult. We saw it with all the receivers that they brought in, right? That Brady ended up icing out, whether it be N'Keal Harry or Chad Ochocinco, a veteran, right? It was very hard to pick up the offense, even as a receiver, let alone the quarterback.
Right.
Maybe he's just having a hard time understanding it, getting into the huddle, and spitting back the long verbiage that Josh McDaniels is giving to him. If he's struggling with that, because to me, I think, you know, there are certain things that might be tough to beat out of him, right? The turnovers, the taking what the defense is giving him. To me, when I hear this quote, I almost sort of look at it and saying, are you seeing what we want you to see? Are you understanding why we're telling you to do the things you're doing? Can you just repeat back the play that we're asking you to repeat?
Yeah.
And I'm worried those are the things that he isn't understanding, and that I think Josh McDaniels is going to be frustrated with, and maybe that's why he's sort of leaving these, we talked about it with Mac Jones, right? The verbal breadcrumbs.
Right.
Right? Of, well, he's trying to understand. He doesn't understand it yet, but he's trying.
Right.
Meaning he doesn't understand my offense. It's not a me issue, right? Like, it's just my offense. He's just not getting it yet. He will eventually, but he just doesn't get the offense.
We're trying to understand what we're trying to do here.
He's trying, to understand exactly what we're doing.
Trying to understand what we're doing. So we, in that context, that's not coordinator and quarterback. That doesn't imply to me a collaborative process.
The
we is the coaching staff. Exactly. It's on down the line from McDaniels as they also try to put together a playbook and put together an offensive scheme that melds kind of a lot of philosophies together, which is another whole element into all of this. But it's a bit of an interesting commentary on the quarterback of the New England Patriots and where he is. Jumping from an Alex Van Pelt system that really didn't seem to, I guess it didn't challenge him as the way, but it didn't operate at a level. They didn't have the players. They didn't have the play calling. Nothing about last year's offense was sustainable in the long term for a franchise. You bring in Josh McDaniels, you expect that you're going to get the offense that led to so much success in New England, the offense that Tom Brady mastered and he was able to operate in his sleep, but Tom Brady, in addition to being a very accurate passer, was the smartest quarterback that has ever lived. And so, unfortunately, that's the standard that Josh McDaniels has set and that has been set for him as a play caller in the National Football League.
And I'd say even Mac Jones' rookie year. The number one thing for Mac Jones, the reason he was a first-round pick was because he was so smart. He was cerebral. He was, quote, NFL ready coming out of college. So obviously it was not as complex as it was when Brady was there because they worked together for so long, but I'm sure McDaniels could leave a lot of stuff in with Mac Jones his rookie year more than he could with Cam Newton in 2020 or maybe even Drake May right now this season.
Right.
So I think he sort of has had experience with quarterbacks who could pick up the offense quicker, whether it be Brady, whether it be Mac Jones. And
right.
It feels like Drake May is just maybe a couple steps behind, just in terms of understanding the playbook, understanding the plays, the verbiage, all that.
Because you had quarterbacks who were, because they weren't overtly, you know, gifted physically speaking, they weren't very fast, they weren't able to scramble, like that wasn't a huge part. They weren't quote-unquote dual-threat quarterbacks. They had to survive with their brain and being smarter than whoever they were playing and going through their reads quickly and making those quick passes. And so obviously Mac Jones was never going to be anything close to Tom Brady because he was soft. And as soon as things went wrong, then he fell apart. And then his head coach stopped talking to him, which we'll get to next, because somehow there's even more Belichick drama that came out today as everybody was having a nice Saturday. Another hit piece on Bill Belichick came out, which we'll get to in just a moment. But though Mac Jones was soft and was unable to compete and deal with adversity at the NFL level, he was smart enough to operate the offense. And while Drake May is incredibly physically gifted, and if you could ever harness the physical gifts that he has as a quarterback, you are going to unlock an incredible Josh Allen-esque quarterback, as was mentioned in all caps by the 207. You realize people were calling Josh Allen a bust his first few years. Yes, because he improved and he got smarter with how he operated the offense. Drake May, I think it is very fair to say, is not operating at that cerebral level as a quarterback. He seems like a very bright kid. I'm sure he has the potential to get there, but again, you're going from remedial to AP. You're going from the bottom of the class to the top of the class in terms of understanding and speaking the language of an offense, and that's a lot for a second-year kid to have to deal with. So this is going to be an interesting thing to follow, and again, that's why, as much as I don't want to be a pessimist, and you know what, and everybody's Cheerios, it just makes me look at the first month of football and go, this might be a little more painful than you're hoping for, and you might leave September going, oh, maybe 7 wins is a win for the Patriots this season. But we'll leave that one there because we have plenty more to get to. Belichick, the drama continues. We'll get to that after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I know this is game week, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you had any comment on...
Probably not, but I'll hear you out.
Bill Belichick banning your scouts from USC.
Oh, no, that's an individual choice, and you know, we'll cross that bridge when we start looking at players. I want to focus on our football team, and that's their prerogative. To make the decisions that they feel like are best for them. And then we'll have to find other ways to get the information for any players that we want to look at North Carolina.
Mike Vrabel, head coach of the New England Patriots, tiptoeing around the truth with Bill Belichick and the recent news coming out of UNC, back here on WEEI, talking, well, New England Patriots in a matter of speaking. Just finished up a conversation on Drake May and Josh McDaniels. As we move to the conversation, not of the current New England Patriots, but of the former Patriots and their head coach, Bill Belichick, who, after getting his and his program's doors blown off by TCU in week one of his reign of terror down at UNC, news started to come out, and it was originally propagated by a former scout on his show talking about how Bill Belichick and the powers that be down at UNC had reportedly banned Patriots scouts from attending practices at UNC, saying to the Boston Herald something to the effect of, being treated fairly is a two-way street. Why would we let them down here with how Bill had been treated? Which is a statement that I feel like says a lot more than it meant to. And it kind of marries up with something that Mike Vrabel said offhand, where I'm not sure if he really meant to say it this way, but it's how I perceived it. That was an individual decision. He kind of just said that at the beginning of his answer, almost offhand, if you noticed it. That was an individual decision. And then he goes on to say that we're not worried about that until we start looking at players for next year's draft. And by the way, based on what we saw last week, seems like that won't be much of an issue for Belichick and the players down at UNC. However, that's its own criticism. That's an individual decision. It's they're within their right. It's their own decision to make whether or not they let scouts down there. That's kind of how Vrabel characterized it, as you just heard. And the statement goes right to, why would we let them down there after how he was treated? Now, my understanding with college football, college athletics in general, we'll just leave it there, because with professionals, it's about obviously winning championships, but it's about making money. It's about the individuals playing, making money, and the franchises in the league making money. With college athletics, I know that's kind of been muddied a little bit by the NIL and the transfer portal and all the different additions, but it's supposed to be about the growth of the individual and the ability for a sport like football that has a professional league where you can jump to. It's supposed to be about the individual growing as a student, growing as an athlete, and hopefully taking the next step to be a professional. So why then, when I'm reading a statement that was sent to the Herald via text, am I seeing the rationale being, well, why would we let them down there after how he was treated. Who is this supposed to be about down at UNC? I ask rhetorically, knowing the answer. My understanding was that it was supposed to be the 33rd NFL team. You were supposed to get the leg up by attending North Carolina and playing football over every other college athlete, because with the coaching staff that was assembled, with professional resumes that run a mile long and connections that run a mile long, you were supposed to have a leg up on the competition in terms of being on the radar of 32 teams in the National Football League. That was my understanding of what this was supposed to be about. At its best, bringing in a coach with it in one of the best professional resumes that you'll see of any coach in any sport ever. However, what it's become, what it's been bastardized to become, is just about the head coach and the money. UNC, make no mistake about it, is running laughing to the bank after hiring Bill Belichick as head coach. Laughing to the bank. So if this kind of decision is made, Patriots scouts banned from practice. Now, one team cannot go and scout players, and apparently, according to reports, 31 other teams are having troubles and being only being given limited access. So my players not only do not have a leg up on their competition in terms of being recognized by a professional league, they're actually being held back. They were supposed to get the coaching and the eyeballs and the connections that got them off and running to start their pro career. And now that's all being held back because of the disgruntled nature with which the program is being operated.
And he gave you a preview of this. Not that we didn't think that this was all going to be about Bill when he signed the contract and went to UNC, but the CBS interview, right? What sweatshirt was he wearing? He wasn't wearing a UNC sweatshirt. He's wearing a Navy sweatshirt, because it's never been about UNC and the players and the program and the school. It's always been about Bill.
Right. They are, both sides are using each other at the expense of the players, which is actually a really, really sad thing when you think about that. Belichick is using UNC and this football program in order to stay relevant and hopefully get one more crack at the NFL. By the way, great start. That's what he's doing. UNC is using Belichick in order to reinvigorate donors and get more money flowing into their athletic department and maybe their football program. And I tell you what, both are having I guess UNC's been a little bit more successful. I was about to say both are having success.
I was going to say, after Monday night's game, what team do you think is going to hire Bill?
Belichick has not been having success in his goal at any point during this. The recruiting class was meh. The transfer portal class was apparently supposed to be good, but nothing looked good about the product that they put together on Monday. So of the two sides, UNC is laughing to the bank. So if you see this kind of decision where scouts are banned and no discipline is handed down, nobody issues a correction or a retraction or any kind of denial of that kind of ruling, you know why? It's because UNC is more than financially set. They have donors that are back and connected to the program at least for one more year, or hopefully if the people who are involved are smart, multiple years worth of donations. And so, all right, cool. We're set. Why do we care what this old coot does? Why do we care? UNC is, I would be a little surprised if they were to turn their nose up at the financial benefit of having Belichick there and do something about this. Now, it's getting pretty egregious. You'd be more than well within your right to do, I don't know, anything about the decision that was made. But we haven't heard anything. They put out that statement and they doubled down in the story that was published by ESPN. Kalen Kaler followed up on the original couple of reports that came out, where when reached by ESPN, North Carolina football general manager Michael Lombardi said, quote, good luck, and then hung up the phone. UNC also declined comment. So
that was nice of him.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck. Just, you know, wishing you well. Take two of these and call me in the morning. You know, that kind of wishing you well. I love the line, the term, quote, zero access appears three times on UNC's college relations website, a page accessible only to NFL personnel. I think that's hysterical. I mean, at least they're not hiding anything. It is right out there in the open. And then that brings us to today and Mark Daniels, who wrote a story with a headline that's short, sweet, and somewhere in the North Shore area of Massachusetts making Ted Johnson smile. Bill Belichick's pettiness is sad but not surprising. I'll read an excerpt real quick as Dan Ball reads the paper to you. Belichick has long been a grudge holder. He famously hated the Jets, stemming from his time as an assistant there when the team fought not to have him go to New England. In his final years as the Patriots coach, Belichick's ire grew inside Gillette Stadium, according to multiple sources. Belichick became upset when Kraft told him he couldn't retain Matt Patricia as offensive coordinator following a disastrous 2022 season. Instead, the Patriots hired veteran offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien. If Belichick had his way, Patricia would have been retained. That season, Belichick grew so frustrated with quarterback Mac Jones that he actually stopped talking to the first-round pick altogether. At the time, a source told Mass Live that Jones told people around him that the Patriots stopped coaching him and Belichick refused to talk to him. In 2023, according to a source, Belichick was also upset when Gerard Mayo signed a contract that named him the coach in waiting. The source said that Belichick refused to talk to Mayo, who was coordinating his defense that season. Again, this is not breaking news today. These are all stories that have been reported in certain terms. But as Brian talked about, there was a underlying theme of petty and vengeful, and if you're not with me, you're against me, and all those kind of things. While the Belichick era was still going on, coming to an end, but still going on in New England, and it has followed him to UNC. The difference is, in professional football, you can sign guys to contracts, give them enough money, and you have guys that all they have to worry about is playing football and making money and winning games. With college athletes, with all of the different distractions on field and off, financial, academic, personal, all those different things, it ain't that easy. You can't just entice every single player with all the money in the world to come play for you because you can't spend that kind of money. You only have so much money that you can spend to overhaul a program through NIL. So you're going to have to try to coach up and make the best of what you have in front of you, and guys that are not five-star recruits, because again, you're not coaching Alabama, you're not coaching Georgia, you're coaching UNC. So far, the player procurement and player development process at UNC is going very poorly. The players are not benefiting from anything that's been established for them.
And it's so crazy that he won't let them into practice. I read something, I think it was the other day, where Nick Saban would have scouts and people come to practice solely for the fact of, well, two reasons, really. Obviously, the players would want that. But number two is, think about the benefit for the coach, right? You get better practices when players look across, oh, look, there's a scout from the Packers, from the Ravens, from the Patriots. I'm going to try a little extra hard in practice today. And now you're getting good practice. Bill doesn't even, like, think about any of that stuff. It's all about him. And if he was smart, he would let that stuff kind of happen, but he's just so insecure and selfish and petty that he's not even thinking about the benefits for this team.
And I reiterate this as almost like the warning label on the bottle of what we're discussing. Why are we talking about this in 2025 in Boston? Well, because it's a guy that you can argue is the greatest coach of all time that did his winning in New England, that was the face of winning football and winning sports for a quarter of a century, or two decades. That's a little strong. Two decades. Belichick and Brady, you know, don't forget that. But Belichick was one of the two faces of the winningest dynasty that sports has probably ever seen in Boston.
Not to mention, he was the standalone game on Monday night on ESPN.
Right.
They had no other games. They scheduled just Bill. And it wasn't because they were playing TCU. I can promise you that. Because if you watched any of the pregame, you kind of forgot who they were playing.
Right.
Because it was a 90-minute session on Bill Belichick.
Right. So he's notable still in 2025 in Boston and nationwide because he was just that good as the head coach of the Patriots. And the reason specifically I bring it up, I did not play for Bill Belichick. I did not cover Bill Belichick. I did not get screamed at by Belichick in the locker room. Like, I don't fit any of those criteria. The reason I bring it up is that I'm simply fascinated in the way that he operates right now, in a way that a guy with a resume that he has, that anybody in any walk of life could only dream of being that successful. I would love to have the radio equivalent of 1/100th of Belichick's career. That would be awesome. Everybody is striving to be as successful as what they do as Belichick was as head coach of the Patriots. And this is what it's come to. The head coach of a bad UNC program that is actively shutting out his former team from scouting his players and trying to grasp and claw for something that he simply physically doesn't need. He could have sat right there with Saban on that college game day set and been beloved as the eight-time Super Bowl champion, if you want to count the other rings, not with New England. He could sit there every single week with his hands right on the desk showing all of his rings every single week and talking and making sarcastic jokes. I did jokes down here because he never has any inflection in his voice. And he would have been beloved. And all we would talk about is, hey, Belichick looked good on college game day. He looked good on countdown. He looked good on the NFL on CBS. He looked good on Good Morning Football if things really went south. That's what it could have been. But for some reason, this extra little added chapter is going on right now. And I hate that in sports. I hate when somebody who was elite, somewhere elite to GOAT status at what they did, try to keep going. I wish that we didn't have to talk about this. That's why I want to bring it up.
Don't you feel kind of bad for him on some level?
I do.
Watching that game Monday night.
And everybody will bounce back and go, he's making millions of dollars. He's got a 24-year-old girlfriend. Why do you, he's got eight Super Bowl rings. I don't feel bad for him. Why do you? Because what you just said should be all that we talk about. If you have eight Super Bowl rings and date somebody who's 50 years your junior and you have millions of dollars in the bank account, you should be more than happy with just going off to some deserted island and living your life quietly, or being a part of the, being an advisor to the Patriots or an advisor to another team, or doing something, being on TV, being on the radio, doing anything. But being the coach of a subpar college football team and trying to leverage that into exacting revenge on the Patriots and the rest of the NFL, yeah, that does make me feel bad. Because he's looking for something. He's searching for something, and I just don't know what it is. But I certainly hope he finds it. 617-779-7937. You can say a lot of negative things about Bill Belichick, and a lot of people will laugh and probably agree with you. The one thing I have not heard Belichick do is talk about himself in third person. Unfortunately, the Bruins starting goalie can't say the same thing. We'll talk about that next.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball. On WEEI.
Honey, honey, get the kids in the car now. With the cat.
All right, Brian, I give up. What's the reference here?
This is Jeremy Swindon's favorite band.
Which is?
Ugh.
Yeah, no, you can me on that one. I wouldn't have got that one. Back here on WEEI, cleaning up some of the texts from the 207, also in caps. Maybe McDaniels overcomplicates the offense.
I agree.
I know, and I think the caps actually really kind of hammered it home. From the 401, banning scouts at UNC sounds like a 25-year-old woman's decision. A man that supposedly has a tremendous respect for the game of football banning another man trying to make a living scouting players. Bill B, you are trash. Oh, here we go. We got some numbers. TB, 88%. Other players, 10%. RKK, 2%. Bill Belichick, 0%. I think that's a number that would even make Ted blush.
I was going to say, even Ted gave him more credit than that.
Yeah, it's likely that Bill is looking to squash the, quote, outside noise that would come from media slash scouts from this area. I can't get on board with that because he's welcomed in the outside noise from literally every other source this offseason. And from the 978, why do you guys keep saying 8 Super Bowl rings? It's not hard to get that accurate. We're talking about the ones from his entire career, not just as head coach of the Patriots, because his boat is named Brian Frazocco.
8 rings.
All right, there you go. So to the clip that I wanted to set up, we only have a couple minutes to discuss this, but it only takes a couple of seconds to understand why Bruins fans weren't a huge fan of this.
I'm a completely different human being, and I'm so grateful for that, the ups and downs of it all. Standing here, Jeremy Swayman is in a great spot, and I'm really excited about that.
So the response to this that I saw on Twitter were pretty polarizing. You had the true Homer Honk Bruins fans that said something to the effect of, oh, third person Swayman, he's winning the Vezina this year.
Jeremy Swayman is in a great spot.
And then you had the rest of us in reality going, dude, I mean, can we just answer the question as is presented? So he's doubled down. I've only seen it twice, but maybe he said it more. He's doubled down from the World Championships to now that he is a completely different person. I don't know what that means, but he claims that he is a completely different person year over year. And he said that. I mean, the World Championships go on like towards the end of the play in June, I'm pretty sure. So the Bruins got eliminated, and within a month, he was able to go on some soul-searching journey that allowed him to be a completely different person. He was great in the Worlds. He had 7 wins, I think he had a goals against average in the ones. Like, he was outstanding in that tournament. Then goes through the summer, comes back for captain's practice, and is once again a completely different human being. That's all fine. I'm really happy that he seemed to go on this spiritual journey. I really just need you to stand in front of the puck and stop it more than you did. I'd like to come out of a season where you're getting paid the money that you did and have more shutouts than games with 5 or more goals allowed, because unfortunately you were on the wrong side of that touchdown to interception ratio a season ago. That's really what I need. It's really not that hard. I don't need you talking about yourself in the third person. I understand that Swayman's a very smart guy. He's a very well-educated individual, clearly a pretty cerebral guy. I actually think that could work against you. In a certain sense, when you're a goalie, it's a very, you know, mentally straining position. You have to be locked in and focused at a level that few athletes are. But maybe there's just a bit of overthinking going on there. It certainly sounds, based on that answer, that there's a little too much thinking about Jeremy Swayman going on in Jeremy Swayman's head. Just simplify the game for me. That's what I love to see. Control your rebounds and prove to me that you're worth, not even worth the full value of the contract, but worth me believing in you and the guy that you were when you were sharing a net with Linus Ullmark 2 years ago as the future of the Boston Bruins in net. That's the way that you were trending. We'll see if maybe the defense in front of him with a healthy Hampus Lindholm can help, because I know that certainly was a part of the issue with the Bruins last year. As much as he wasn't himself, the defense was not helping either, but boy, oh boy. Cannot do himself any favors this offseason. Can Jeremy Swayman, talking about Jeremy Swayman in the third person.
Just quickly, congratulations to Jeremy Swayman. Just announced his engagement.
There you go. Well, do you think that he said, will you marry Jeremy Swayman when he went down on one knee?
Not me. It's Jeremy Swayman.
That's right. That's
She's
right.
Like, who?
Jeremy Swayman loves you so much. Will you marry Jeremy Swayman?
Can't wait to hear his vows.
Jeremy Swayman pledges to love and cherish, and talk about the Boston Red Sox right after this.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.